This week, we get Rob drunk and trick him into casting an absentee ballot for Romney. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you now.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
to remind
Process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode 46. Today is October 25th, 2012. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
This is Rob. Yeah, man, Romney. I love you guys. God, I don't feel good. Where are we going next? I'll feel better next place. Come on, where are we going?
Yeah. Just despite Rob's acting, this is not an on-location episode, sadly. We actually tried to do one of those a week or so ago, and unfortunately the Cardinals were playing at the bar that we normally frequent, and the sound was just terrible. So we ended up,
fortunately the Cardinals were playing. It was an awesome game.
It was an awesome game. That was game five of the division series, and we watched them beat up on the Nationals. But the sound quality was just not up to par, so I didn't feel like I could use that. Somebody's Darth Vader in pretty
unlike bad. Right now when Rob's breathing into the microphone.
That is me.
So I think we may cut out a couple of clips from that recording and insert them into this episode. But apart from that, I don't know, we may save that audio from on location and make that a bonus episode or something. I don't know. Or maybe a subscription only episode.
Ooh. Big money.
That's right. So anybody out there that wants to be part of our inner circle, all you have to do is send us $10 through PayPal, and we'll let you hear the entire uncut on location episode. It was, parts of it were pretty entertaining. We had somebody, her name was Laura, come up to the table and start talking to us, and she talked for a long time. I mean, it was probably an hour or more, and some of the things she said were thought provoking. So I think we'll probably cover one or two of those in this episode.
Thought provoking, not because they were very intelligent and well thought out either.
No. Sorry, Laura.
Yeah, sorry. If you're listening, Laura, we have some thoughts.
And then there was a fight at the end.
Yeah, then there was almost a fight at the end when her and her husband left the bar. So, yeah, I mean, anything in particular that you wanted to pick apart?
The theme of the evening of this talk was the most interesting part of it was about what it means to say the U.S. is the best country on earth.
Yeah.
So this whole scenario we're talking about now might be more realistic.
My end point is.
Okay, final point.
Sorry, but America is the best country in the world.
I'll give you a high five. Just because
I disagree, but I would defend your right to say that.
That's right.
I don't know. Who do you think the best country is? But I'm going to say this one is the best perfect country there is.
All right.
All right.
Because you are allowed to state your opinion and why. Because of
unless you're at a different political rally, then they tell you you're wearing the wrong shirt, so get out of here.
And so we tried to parse out what that really means or what that feeling means. we thought, well, surely you just mean it's your favorite country, or you wouldn't want to live anywhere else, or you have your highest hopes and aspirations with this country, or you think the most good comes out of this country, whatever it is. And she's like, no, it's just the best. And so we got into kind of a little bit of a heated discussion about what that actually means. Like, best in what? Infant mortality? Ooh. Education? Ooh. We're not very good at sprinting. Ooh. You know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I just flat out, you know, rejected her assertion.
And you were a little more forceful.
Yeah, and she didn't care for that at all. And I think, you know, then she had to go over and tell her husband, who we found out later was prior Army. And, you know, so it was just, I mean, the whole thing was very stereotypical. Like, you know, those people are out there, the ultra patriotic, just, you know, nationalistic, almost jingoistic people in this country. Right. And I personally find that very disturbing. And, you know, obviously they see nothing wrong with, you know, it's the whole, like, they poke fun of it in Team America, you know, like, for our listeners who have never seen that, that's Trey Parker and Matt Stone's marionette movie that they made several years ago. But, I mean, that whole movie is just completely over the top, like, America, you know, it's, you know, the best country on earth. And I think it's obvious in the movie that they're not serious, but then you meet these people like we did in the bar that night, and they are serious. And I don't know. It's just, it's kind of scary.
Yeah. Go ahead. Scary. Scary for several reasons. One, this guy was in the Army. I don't know what he did in the Army, but theoretically, he is out representing the United States in foreign countries.
Right.
To have an attitude like, we're the best, so, you know, you're beneath me. That's how I would imagine his attitude would be towards people if you're that...
Right.
If you're that sure that... Well, America is the greatest, and you ask them why, just because you don't, even to other Americans, you don't need to, I don't need to tell you why we're awesome. We just are, and suck it.
So exactly. Like he told me that, you know, as he was leaving, that America is the best country. And if you don't believe it, I'll help you pack. That's what he said to me. And
as he turned his hat backwards and donned his security jacket,
yeah,
like, oh, good. He's also in charge of keeping, you know, protecting people theoretically, which means I am above the law. So generally, it's just a general attitude of I'm above you.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like everybody he meets who's not American, they're automatically inferior to him. And, you know, that's a problem. That's how the Nazis came to power, right? I mean, so yeah, that's not a good attitude to have.
And clearly, by the way he talked to you, he's not someone where you can engage him in a discussion about it.
Right.
You're not really going to influence him.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, he just kind of shut down as soon as he heard that, you know, we didn't agree with him. And
yeah. If you don't agree with me, I'll beat you up. Well, that's a very mature. Yeah,
that's helpful.
Yeah, yeah, and it's interesting how it plays out in, you know, in our politics too. Like we've had a lot less of that. Like I think you couldn't have Team America now. I don't think, and it's interesting for me in my young age, you know, when all that was going on. When there was a lot more of why do you hate America type stuff and a lot more religion bandied about the politics, I didn't have the foresight at my young age, I say again, that it wasn't always going to be like this. It seemed like it was permanent. You know, you get that feeling when it's all going on that you're like, you get, especially if you're on the losing side of the politics too, you feel like this is going to happen every year. They're just going to throw up another Republican guy and they're going to question everybody's patriotism and whether they believe in God enough, we're going to lose again. Like, it feels like it's going to last forever, but it's interesting in hindsight, like the way the personalities change and the way the circumstances change. Like, I think just the way the economy is playing forth in this election versus what it was like in 2004. I think it's a much more substantive debate this time around than it was in 2004, when it was really just a like all out attack on who thinks America is more awesome than the other person.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's interesting that you bring that up, because I think that movie came out. It could have only have come out during George W. Bush's time in office, right? I mean, following 9/11, there's this overwhelming sense of hyper patriotism, and the problem is that for some people that hasn't subsided, and some of them are just always that way, and I'm not trying to say that you shouldn't have love for your country. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, I think it blinds you to, first of all, it makes it very hard for any dissenting opinion to kind of, enter the conversation when, you're blinded by this notion that America can do no wrong, and it clearly can. So if you're not even allowed to talk about the things that it does poorly, because it's a foregone conclusion that we're the best country on earth. So
it's like a parent who believes my child would never do something like that. Meanwhile, they're over there peeling the wallpaper off the wall at their aunt's house or something.
Right.
Like, yeah, your child is screwing up and you need to fix that. And turning a blind eye and just saying they're the best isn't going to – you can't miracle them into being a good child or the best child just because you believe they are.
Right.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. That's how I was thinking, too. It's like you love your country in a way that you want it to do the best that you can. But even that statement in 2004 was like, sounds like you don't love it.
Right.
That's what it felt like.
Yeah, well, right. You're
I had to struggle through the John Kerry candidacy, so you have to remember that's where we come from.
You're either with us or you're against us, right? That's kind of where this all comes from.
Yeah. Yeah, or like Barack Obama's foreign policy experience. He doesn't have any foreign policy experience. Definitely, like a 100% legitimate criticism of Barack Obama in 2008, but like hasn't even come up in this election. Nobody's questioned Mittens's foreign policy experience. We're just like, maybe he'll make some jobs. It's almost like a minor. It's almost like a minor point. He'll just struggle through the foreign policy debate and hope he doesn't say anything too silly. Like, that was the main goal. Like, what a far way we've come, Like, is the world any less dangerous than it was?
Yeah.
And it does. It makes me think of how much, like how much of our leaders and our media and things that we can control actually change the tone of the nation and what we're thinking about and talking about versus just events basically driving the scenario. We did have the economic collapse, and that was obviously going to drive things. But wow. I mean, or just the religion thing, like how much religion came up in 2004 when John Kerry's a Catholic, does he really go to church, and how the evangelicals all rallied around Bush, but even, Christians aren't going to rally around Obama or Mitt.
Right.
So it doesn't even come up. Like, where did they all go? It's good to realize from the long view that whatever seems to be dominating the conversation or the way that seems the politics work, has changed so much in the 10 years, or it doesn't change at all if you're super cynical.
Or a realist.
Right. I mean, a lot of ways it is the same, but But yeah, in these minor details about which groups seem to hold sway. Or maybe they don't hold sway. Maybe that's it. You know, maybe these evangelicals in Iowa are just as important or not as important as they were before, but the media shines a light on them. But it's also true in what the candidates say. I mean, what the candidates' platform are very much driven by the personalities that they have. You know, you can't have Karl Rove running Mitt's campaign because Karl Rove and Ralph Reed need to hit that evangelical button. You know, well, they can't do it with Mitt, so, you know, sorry, Ralph.
Right. So, speaking of the debates, we've had a couple of those since our last episode. What did you guys think?
I did not watch all of the second one, and I saw hardly any of the third one. So I am unworthy of making a comment.
That hasn't stopped you before. I didn't see much of the third one, you know, but the second one I enjoyed. Got to see the little feisty Obama. Plus, he made more jokes.
Yeah. So, yeah. And it's interesting that, I mean, we talked before about, you know, in the first debate, we thought that Obama was somewhat subdued and that was done on purpose, you know, so that he could, like, come out swinging in the second and third debates and, you know, get the award for best improved candidate or whatever. but I wonder how much of that was strategy and how much of it was just the change in, like, the format, you know, the town hall format. Does that, like, energize him? And, you know, that's just his element, so he does much better in that setting. I don't know. I'm just speculating.
And I've heard of the conspiracy that the first one was, it was staged to be bad. And then come back, like, exceed expectations right at the end.
Right. Well, it's like, it's like losing on purpose at badminton in the Olympics, right? So you can.
That's nobody would ever do that.
So, yeah, the second debate. Well, first of all, there was a VP debate in there too that we haven't commented on. But the one comment I'll make about the VP debate was, I felt it was more of an actual debate than the first presidential one, because they were actually paying attention to the words coming out of each other's mouths, you know, right. like they were responding to each other, engaging one another. And it wasn't just, you know, question, okay, pivot now, let me get back to my talking points. I mean, there was a certain amount of that, but not as much as we saw in the first presidential debate. So right. it felt more like a debate. But this second one, second presidential debate, I thought it was interesting. And, you know, to me, the most interesting part of it was at the very end when they started talking about Libya, you know, and the attack on the U.S. consulate.
What did they say? I mean, what was the discussion there? I did not see that part of it.
Well, there was some disagreement over, you know, like the facts and the exact timeline of when things were said and who said them. And specifically, President Obama claimed that he had condemned it as an act of terror in his Rose Garden speech the day after it happened.
I don't think that's quite accurate, is it?
And Romney, you know, claimed it wasn't accurate, that that it was like 2 weeks later before he, you know, used those words for the first time. But, you know, I looked at the whole fact check thing the day after the debate, and he did say those words in his Rose Garden speech. Now, depending on this could be a thing with the what do they call it, the Oxford comma, depending on where the comma is in the sentence, it could have a very different meaning. I mean, he makes that statement about act of terror, but because he's referring to something that happened on 9/11, and then he says something about how the United States will respond to any act of terror.
Right.
It's almost like you could interpret it two ways. Like, was he talking about this thing that happened on the anniversary of 9/11, right, or was he talking about the original 9/11 attack? And so, you know, I've seen commentary both ways.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that is you could definitely be read both ways. For me personally, maybe because I'm a Obama man, like, I don't see what the big deal is really about what he said when. It all became silly. So, Jeremy, if you haven't seen it, Mitt doubles down at some point and says, you didn't call it an act of terror. Did you call it an act of terror? And, like, starts challenging our president, you know. And so start,
our president. Rob. Give me a break. Yeah,
I said it. That was just for you. And kind of
never said that when George Bush was in office.
That's right. Figuratively, kind of like gets all up in his biz, and then the moderator basically says, "Well, he did say acts of terror in that speech, you know," and kind of shot Mitt down. And then, of course, all the news organizations at the end are playing that part of the speech where he says acts of terror, which then causes Fox News to say, "But he was really talking about something else." And
yeah,
I mean, I think to me, it's pretty obvious maybe it's not obvious, but what I think went on there was that nobody knew what the heck was going on at the time.
I don't believe that.
If he called it an act of terror then, why did they start backtracking and say it was a protest? It was protesters gone wild.
Yeah.
And maybe there's some indications that there were some terrorists involved who took advantage of the protest and sort of terror, but we didn't find out. Well, we knew sooner than
and we now know that there was no protest, that, you know, this was a completely premeditated attack. And I'll put a link in the show notes to this, but this was a interesting essay on, well, it was on Fox News, so take it for what it's worth. But it was Judge Napolitano writing about, I guess there's some evidence now that the ambassador who was killed is actually a CIA agent. And
what? I don't believe that for a second.
Well,
what?
And that, you know, the other people who were killed there in the embassy that day were also agents, intelligence agents. He says in here, earlier this week, my colleagues at Fox News discovered that the building in which they were killed was and was known locally to be a CIA facility, and that the future Ambassador Stevens had used that facility to meet with Libyan rebels during the Gaddafi years. And he says, if Stevens was a CIA agent, he was in violation of international law by acting as the U.S. ambassador. And if he and his colleagues were intelligence officials, they are not typically protected by Marines because they ought to have been able to take care of themselves. And if Rice, he's referring to the U.S. Envoy to the U.N., her name's Susan Rice. And if Rice knowingly lied to the American public about a matter as grave as this, she should be fired. So, I don't know. It's interesting to me because, you know, there's been a lot made over the fact that, you know, there was no security detachment at this building.
But hold on a second.
Okay.
Hold yellow up. Flag. Yellow flag for holding on a second.
Okay.
Like, why are we talking about this? How did it come up in the debate? What is the whole purpose? Now I'm getting all fired up. Like, why did this come up in the debate? What is the purpose? What is the politics behind this coming up? It's because it's the old Republican paint the Democrat as not knowing what to do on foreign policy, that he's weak. He's weak in the face of these Muslims that he probably likes anyway because he's from Kenya.
Right.
It's that's the politics that's behind this. I mean, it is a very interesting story. I wonder what all went on. And I'm sure there's some dicey things. And I'm sure they got conflicting intelligence reports. And they were trying to figure out exactly what to tell the American people. Oh, I'm sure it's a very juicy story. But the juicy story is not why it shows up in the debate. It shows up in the debate as a way of portraying the president as somebody who's cozy with Muslims and weak on foreign policy, which is absolutely BS, I say.
Well, okay, maybe, but...
So why does Bain Capital show up in a debate?
Here's...
I don't think it did.
Here's why I think that the administration has probably been playing this down, you know, that... Because, I mean, it could be... They could play it up, right? I mean, here Americans were killed on the anniversary of 9/11, you know, so... The world's still dangerous, and you know you don't want to change horses midstream. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You know that's a point that's they could be hammering on, and instead, you know, we seem to have this like 2 weeks of kind of ambiguous response to this, and I think it's because either A. They know that there were some things that just weren't quite kosher about the whole situation, whether that be, you know, that the State Department wasn't taking good enough care of its people,
right.
Or there is some truth to this allegation that they were intelligence operatives, which, you know, is a no-no, or possibly C, which this kind of eclipses the whole Obama got Bin Laden thing, because now here's an attack. Here are people that need to be brought to justice, and chances are good the next president is going to bring these guys to justice who may not be Obama.
So how does that? All right. How does them downplaying that help that third option?
Well,
it doesn't give them an opportunity.
Well, because he can, you know, when you want to talk, when the topic is the war on terror, the only card he has to play is, I got Bin Laden.
Yeah. You know?
That's not true. He's got to end the war in Iraq and draw down the Afghanistan.
Well,
I think he's got a strong hand to play, and that's why they're trying to beat him up on this Benghazi thing.
But that's two different audiences. I mean, the hawks don't want to hear us pulling out of Iraq and pulling out of Afghanistan. Right,
but I think I think the American people like it. Look at me talking about the American people. Well, when is this political season going to end? It's infecting my brain.
My point is he's got this card that he can play. I got Bin Laden. Boom.
Right.
It you know everybody's got to shut up when he plays that card. There's no comeback to that.
Right.
And this maybe takes a little bit of the magic out of that card, because I got Bin Laden, and then now there's an asterisk by it. Yeah, but you didn't get these guys who killed the U.S. ambassador in Benghazi.
So we agree. It's political silliness.
Well, it's not political silliness in the sense that, you know, these four Americans died. And,
right.
And this was, you know, apparently a planned attack. So that, you know, that's certainly tragic. But the reason it came up in the debate, to answer your question before, is because Mitt Romney made it a political topic. And I think, you know, I think Obama was justified in calling him out on that during the debate.
Right.
Because I don't think it's something that should be, you know, especially when you've lost lives, I don't think it's something that should be immediately made into political hay.
Yeah.
Where's the line between political hay and discussing an important event?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I see what you're saying. But then Obama goes on The Daily Show and sticks his foot in his mouth.
And says it's not optimal. Thanks for bringing that up. I was going to warn Rob to get his scoffing voice ready. I was going to bring that up. But... How do you make a gaffe like that?
Yeah, well...
Wait, I missed it. What did he say?
Well, part of it is The Daily Show, after all. I mean, it is Comedy Central, so you know, let's not put too much weight on what he said. He you know, he is allowed to let his hair down a little bit on the comedy channel, but
not when you're talking about people getting killed.
No, but
what did he say? Remind me.
His comment. What John Stewart asked him, you know, if security was lacking, and you know, if I forget how he phrased it exactly, but Obama's response was, well, you know, four Americans being killed in that way is not optimal, meaning, you know, things could have been better, but that's not how he put it. And then of course somebody went and tracked down the wife or the mother of one of the people who died.
The mother of the ambassador.
Oh, was it? And yeah. You know, she had some pretty it's pretty she harsh said, harsh words.
My son is not very optimal. He's very dead.
Yeah.
Hmm.
What say you, Rob?
I say nothing.
Well,
okay, how can you say nothing though?
What are we insinuating that he has no heart, that he's cavalier with American lies? Like what's the claim here?
Now that's the Fox News spin on this. I'm not making any of those claims. I'm just saying that, you know, this has been an uncomfortable situation for him to deal with from the beginning, and I'm trying to figure out why. Because in an election year, I mean, good Lord, this is a godsend, or it should be. You know, he could be riding this thing looking very, very commander-in-chiefy if he wanted to. Right?
Right.
But he's not. I mean, it's almost like it's this thing that's just going on in the news, and, you know, he's addressing it when he has to, but it's not really his thing.
Right.
And I think it plays a little bit into the disengaged president that they're trying to paint him with, saying, you know, he doesn't take action. He's lost interest. And I agree that a comment like, well, it isn't optimal, I don't know that makes him a bad president, but I think it shows he's not, general sense that he's not treating the situation with the gravity it deserves. I think that's opinion. And
well, I place a lot of secret motivations on Mitt Romney, so I will accept your secret motivations.
Why not? But I'm not sure those are secret motivations. I just in one sense, they're saying, why is Mitt Romney politicizing this? But then, I lost what I was going to say about that. Never mind.
But you're right. You're worried that it's unveiling a certain cavalierness about the Middle East or about, I don't know, American deaths or.
I don't even know that it's that much. I don't even know that that's what I'm trying to say. It's
okay.
I really don't. Yeah, I do. I appreciate that, but you're giving it more weight than I was intending. I'm not. It just. What? Why would you? Why? I just want to know why he would say that. That it's not optimal. I mean, how could you think that's an okay response?
Yeah.
Daily Show or not?
Right. Maybe he. Yeah. Maybe he stepped in it. I mean, I certainly. I think he's got. He's got kind of a good sense of humor too, so that almost works against. It works against him. On you don't think he does?
I mean,
I thought his little jokes in debate too.
I think
he
does, but there's no humor in that situation.
Well, right. So that's why I'm saying it works against him in this situation because if he's got such a finely tuned sense of humor, how does he blow it so bad? You know, why does he say something like that? You know. He doesn't have a pattern of trying to be funny and sucking at it.
Right.
That's more of a Mitt thing.
I don't know. He was pretty good in that Al Smith speech. I watched his too.
Yeah. I thought Obama's was better.
Yeah.
Yeah. for what Jerry said, I mean, I'll definitely do some thinking about that. That's something I haven't heard. Is why not out of whatever's going on? Why did they decide to not capitalize on it?
Right.
And even if it was something that was weak for them, why not take a page out of the Karl Rove playbook and just like completely pounce on your weaknesses, you know, and turn them into strengths? That's the Karl Rove plan.
Right.
Which I loved about the Swift boats. I mean, what did John Kerry actually have on George W. as far as being a good American? You know, he had his war service, he had his sacrifice, he had his, you know, him getting hurt in war while George Bush was jacking around in Georgia or whatever he was doing. That was the one thing he had. And the Rove magic, I mean, what do? You take that weakness and you pull it into a strength. And now John Kerry's he looks French. You know, by the end, we all thought George Bush was the real American and Kerry was the guy who never served his country. You know, they flipped it on its head. So why not pull that here?
Right.
Even if it was a weakness, like why? It's like it's almost as if they didn't know what to do with it. Like they didn't head it off, nor did they turn it into to an asset.
Yeah.
But
maybe they thought it's
that's where I was going. That's where I was going with my comment earlier. Thanks for reminding me, Rob.
So that's what I do.
We keep talking about Mitt Romney politicizing the Benghazi event, and now you're saying, or it has been said, if I don't want to be accusatory,
accuse away.
Well, the Obama administration should have either seized on this as an opportunity to show XYZ that they can do this or they can do that. And
well, that's the incumbent's privilege, right? I mean,
oh, give me a break.
Well, it is. When you're the president, you get to look presidential, right? So you get to do the things the president does. And, you know, the fact that it makes you political points as well is, you know, that's the advantage.
Being the incumbent.
Right. That's the advantage the incumbent has. And, you know, it's pretty easy to do that and not make it look like you're doing that.
I agree, because you are expected to talk about it and do something about it, but then people can't challenge you on it. I keep hearing these little things that put the president above the other, the candidate, the potential, you know, his opponent, saying, well, he, in the debate, you need to treat him with more respect because he's the president. Well, you're in a debate and you're there to hash things out or, you know, go after each other. I don't see that.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't understand what it's supposed to be then, but.
Well, there's a fine line there between, you know, attacking the other guy, but then still looking like you could be president, right? I mean, you don't want to come off as being overly aggressive or.
I agree, but.
Somebody that, you know, could come unhinged.
No, I agree with that, but to say, well, he can do this to you because he's the president, but you cannot do that to him because he's the president.
No, all I meant was he could respond to this in the way you would expect a president to respond, and then at the same time make political points.
Okay, and I agree with that. I'm saying I don't think he responded in a presidential way.
No, he didn't. You're right. And that's
okay.
That's what puzzles me about the whole thing.
I agree with that.
All right.
Ooh, man, that was a long way to go for all of us to agree.
All right, we're going to
we all in agreement. Oh, okay. Well,
we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll dive into some listener feedback. So stay with us.
We'll be right back.
We are back. We got some interesting listener feedback from listener John, his new listener. He said, very interesting. Almost like the McLaughlin group I watch on Sunday mornings. Although Jerry, as the tiebreaker, should definitely ask a question and, despite what the others say, tell us what the correct answer is. Now that would be awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess I need to start doing that, keeping you guys in check. Our listener Jordan responded to us, our comments to him in the last episode. Thanks for dropping the hello, guys. I really had a good laugh at the freeloader comment. Myself and Welfare Queens actually hold bi-weekly meetings to discuss the lack of federal taxes we pay. The only thing that is bad about that is the Welfare Queens expect me to get them a ride there, a babysitter, a gallon of milk, and a monthly stipend. What can you do?
Yay. Good comment.
Yeah. And our listener Eric provided a link to an interesting essay and says that it, quote, relates to the idea of property rights in the 21st century. It raises some interesting points. We've talked a little bit about property rights here on the show before in the past, and this particular article is about, well, the title is, if I fly a UAV, or an unmanned air vehicle, over my neighbor's house, is it trespassing? So it asks an interesting question there, because I think it says in there, if you were to, you know, jump your neighbor's fence into their yard, there's no question you're trespassing. But if you just fly a UAV with a camera on it, let's say, and let it hover in their yard, checking out what's, you know, what's going on in their yard, are you trespassing?
Yeah. I don't know the if article's... there's anything new. Look at
what?
Look at
UAVs?
Well, UAVs are new. I'll give them that. But the idea of essentially hanging over someone's airspace. When you have a tree that's growing near a property line, it's hanging over into someone else's yard, you're responsible for that tree. Isn't this similar? I mean, you can't say, well, the tree is trespassing, but if a limb falls off onto their house, is the other neighbor responsible? I don't know. I think they might be.
Yeah. Well,
I'm going to consult a tree surgeon and get back to you guys next episode.
Okay. I think there's two issues here. I mean, there's the property rights issue, but there's also privacy rights. And you know, the two could be related, but I think they're separate things in this instance. You know, is it trespassing? I mean, I put myself, if I was on a jury in this case, you know, there are certain circumstances where I could say, yeah, it is trespassing. You know, if you're deliberately piloting this craft over your neighbor's property, you know,
yeah,
then I think you're setting yourself up for being guilty of trespassing.
Does it fall under trespassing, or is it more along the lines of harassment?
Well, it depends what you're doing with the UAV. You know, like if you're just flying it around and you want a wide open space to fly it in, so you take it up high enough that it's over everybody's houses and you're just, you know, flying around in a circle, is that trespassing? No. I mean, I wouldn't think so. But, you know, but if it's down lower and it's actually, you know, at an altitude where it could potentially interfere with something, you know, you could fly into their house and damage some property, or, you know, maybe yeah, even hit a person that's on the ground, then, you know, then I think you've crossed a line. Now, you know, the interesting part is there's no case law for this yet. Nobody has been prosecuted for this. So, you know, it hasn't gone to court. And the article is referring to, you know, case law from, I don't know, I forget how old the cases were, but they go back a ways. And, you know, one of them pertained to a couple that owned property that was in the glide path of an airport.
Yeah.
And they wanted to, you know, sue the airport because the noise of the planes flying over their house was causing their chickens to basically kill themselves from the stress. And, you know, the court found that, no, that, you know, the airspace above your house is public airspace. And, you know, the planes are allowed to fly there. But, you know, obviously there's some altitude at which it's no longer public airspace. Like, if the plane's flying so low it could hit the roof of my house.
Well, you even see this in, you know, the home builder, T.R. Hughes. I think, what's Tom Hughes? Have you heard of this guy?
No.
He built a lot of developments in St. Charles and O'Fallon.
Okay.
West of here. Anyway, I'm pretty sure he was the guy. One of his developments, it was where he actually had a home, but anybody else who bought into this development had to sign a waiver saying they would not complain about him leaving via helicopter.
Oh, okay.
So I think we've had flashes of this same debate before, not in the sense of a UAV, but in the sense of there's something in the air that's noisy, or maybe some people would even say dangerous, and I don't like it.
Right. Yeah. Well, so, you know, a lot of these UAVs, like the quadcopters that you see now, they have built-in HD cameras on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think that would be an interesting twist to this, because now you're talking about privacy rights, you know, because you could be hovering that camera over somebody's yard and spying on them with it. So it's not just the annoyance of the aircraft there and the noise. It's also that it's looking at you or at your property. And
I'm sorry, I just had a flash to, you know, when little kids are arguing with each other. He's looking at me.
Yeah, right.
Tell him to stop looking at me. Yeah. Well, and how is that any different from somebody with a telephoto lens? I'm not saying I have one.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think it is different. I mean, it's still clearly spying on somebody, but you know, you're a lot more likely to get caught with the quadcopter hovering over their yard looking down at their house.
I agree.
All right. So one other story I wanted to mention that I thought was kind of interesting. This was an essay written in response to the first presidential debate. And this is on Little Green Footballs. And the comment that Mitt Romney made about, you know, shutting down PBS and getting rid of Big Bird. This essay makes the point, and the title is "How Privatization of NASA's The Learning Channel Devolved into a For-Profit Child Exploitation Channel." So it's interesting, because I didn't know this, that the Learning Channel on cable started out as a government-funded channel that, you know, NASA paid for. And it was originally intended to air, you know, science programming and history and just educational programming. And it wasn't until, you know, NASA sold it, and that it eventually wound up as one of Discovery Channel's networks, that, you know, the amount of educational programming on it continued to decrease until, you know, now you've got Honey Boo Boo on the channel. So
there's a lot to learn there.
Yeah.
Who is an Obama supporter.
Yeah, true. So I just thought, you know, I thought that was interesting that they made that point, that, You get rid of public television, you turn it all into for-profit television, and you know, you get what you wish for, I guess.
Come on, Rob, make a comment about capitalism.
So what you're gonna get, baby. As long as it makes that money, and Honey Boo Boo's making it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's sad that that's apparently what the public wants, but
it's because we're stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are. And we think America's the greatest country on earth. All right. I think this brings us to the end of another podcast. Thanks. Thanks to all our listeners. And we will see you next time.
Good night.
Bye now.
This is the third time that Governor Romney and I have met recently. As some of you may have noticed, I had a lot more energy in our second debate. I felt really well rested after the nice long nap I had in the first debate. Although it turns out millions of Americans focused in on the second debate, who didn't focus in on the first debate, and I happen to be one of them. But that's okay. I'm still making the most of my time in the city. Earlier today, I went shopping at some stores in Midtown. I understand Governor Romney went shopping for some stores in Midtown. And it brought back some great memories, because some of you know I went to school here in New York, had a wonderful experience here. Used to love walking through Central Park, loved to go to old Yankee Stadium, the house that Ruth built, although he really did not build that. I hope everybody's aware of that. It's been 4 years since I was last at the Al Smith dinner, and I have to admit some things have changed since then. I've heard some people say, Barack, you're not as young as you used to be. Where's that golden smile? Where's that pep in your step? And I say, settle down, Joe. I'm trying to run a cabinet meeting here.